sound when the clap happened.
Bagah! You made a bagah!
You cannot bagah during the clap or you're defeating the purpose of the clap. This is what I've realized.
I feel like that might just need to say in the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Indie Film Review with me, Dan, and that is Jared. Say hi, Jared.
Hi, guys.
This episode of the Indie Film Review is brought to you by Wizards of Wallaby Washing, Red Ryder BB Guns, Cooper's Damn Fine Coffee, Powerline Brand Powerlines, Elmer Fudd's Fudge Nut Cookies, the Podcaster Association of America, Fred's Fancy Fanny Packs, Shower Caps for Shitty People, Beans, Monumental Magpie Production, Greg's Golden Showers and Plumbing, and Grape Flavored Kool-Aid.
I'd like to give a special shout-out to our mega sponsor, Beans.
Beans,
you got that? For supporting us. Yeah, Beans have always been there for us. Really kept the show, you know, kept the lights on around here. Thank you, Beans.
I laughed out loud when I typed out shower caps for shitty people. and Greg's Golden Showers and Plumbing.
I mean, this entire podcast could just be you listing advertisements. And I'd be fine with it.
That took me yeah, 5 minutes to come up with those 12 names, man. Some of them...
The reason why we did that little skit bit, is because we watched a film, Dan. What did we watch?
We watched The Sisters Brothers.
Oh.
It's a Western.
The Sisters Brothers.
2018, directed by who gives a fuck? I just saying. I did not look him up.
Jock... And then A-U-D-I-A-R-D.
Jacques Adriaud.
Adriaud? Okay. Jacques Adriaud. That
sure
works.
Jacques Adriaud. And the beginning of this film is a black screen that populates with as many, or probably more, production companies that I listed as sponsors for this show. Just right at the very
way
top.
Way more.
And not only that, but it goes one by one. So you're sitting there staring at a black screen that has production companies populate it like every 5 second intervals. And you're like, what the fuck am I? What is all this?
It's a nightmare. I was furious. I was like, this is the worst. And I started fast forwarding through it because I could not handle it. It was torture. One of the worst ways to open up a movie. And I'm like, what are they thinking?
To be completely fair to the... we're going to get into our regular swing of things. But just to like talk about that attitude. Like the worst way to open up a movie. They took a huge risk in the way they opened up the movie afterward too. Because basically the opening of this movie is just a gunfight at night. So you don't see anything besides the gunfire. And it's a pretty cool way of doing it, but if you're trying to attract people to your movie, that's going to be a hard sell, especially after you piss people off with all these production companies. You know what I mean?
Well, this is a special Western. We've seen a few special Westerns on this show and just in our free time, for sure, because I love Westerns.
Yeah.
But this one really subverts expectation as to like what a classic Western would be, because I feel like normally Western's all about the gunfights and like the gunplay, you know. Mm-hmm. If you watch like My Name Is Nobody or stuff like that, it's really about like, ooh, we can do like these cool tricks, and it's like the fantasy of the West, of the cowboy, you know, of the gunslinger. This movie has no fantasy really in it. It's all about, these are just dudes who have to do a job, and they're really good at killing people. And the way they shoot the violence in the movie is almost in a mundane, like, this isn't the focus. This is just a thing we have to do. And I kind of like that, and I really like the actual opening of this movie compared to the awful credit intro.
Yeah, yeah.
So, of the film.
Before we go any further, basically, The Sisters Brothers, 2018, this is a film... about a person who has been contracted to die. Like, somebody's trying to kill this person. And the Sisters Brothers are hitmen for hire. And you have Joaquin Phoenix as Charlie Sister, and you have John C. Reilly as Eli Sister. And they are receiving letter correspondence from some dude named Morris, who's played by Jake Gyllenhaal. And they're trying to kill this prospector.
Mr. Warm.
Mr. Warm.
Herman Kermit Warm. And he's played by Riz Ahmed. And all the actors in this movie are fantastic.
They are. Well, Jake Gyllenhaal and Riz Ahmed were in Nightcrawler together.
Yeah.
So you had that kind of playing off of it. Anyway, the sisters brothers are hired to kill Mr. Warm. And Morris basically doubles back on his contract and saves Warm's life. For the time being, and then we progress into the narrative from there.
Wow, way to spoil everything, you fucking piece of shit. No,
there's still more than that, isn't there? I just spoiled the big first thing. Jeez.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dan, let's get into questions. Yes. How did this movie make you feel while you were watching it? Like, from start, middle, end. Did you just kind of, like, feel the same way? Did this movie, like, because it roller coastered me a bit.
Definitely had some trouble figuring out what was going on because Morris is introduced as a narrator in terms of, like, we get his letters read to us by him. So I had no idea where he came from or why we should pay attention to him because he's not one of the sisters' brothers. So
yeah.
I was back and forth with trying to figure out what the narrative was about the entire movie. And then I started to realize, oh, this guy's addressing the sisters and brothers in his letters. So he must be like writing to them. This film made me feel annoyed at certain times. Like what bothered me the most about this film was the sound design, like the music, the score that they used. It was interesting in some parts, but to me, it just didn't fit a Western.
Okay.
Like, it didn't feel very Western. I don't know. Like, call me old-fashioned, but I need to have that guitar and harmonica in my Westerns.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't hate the music.
No, it wasn't something that I hated, but just every once in a while, whenever I started to really pay attention to the music, I was like, I don't know if that really goes with what this is talking about. So, Jared, you said you liked the acting. How did you like some of these amazing camera shots? I mean, they weren't amazing. I'm not being biased.
Okay, so at first I was like, this is a film where we're not going to get interesting camera shots. They're just going to shoot whatever the scenes are, and it's going to be way more about the dialogue and these actors carrying the movie. And eventually we do get some interesting shots. But I feel sometimes it's like they go to so many different type. Like it, I almost started to focus more on what weird camera thing they're doing instead of like what's going on in the movie. Like there's one scene where it had Charlie played by Joaquin Phoenix. He's like talking about how he found where his target was, but he was like in this room that was surrounded by darkness, mm-hmm. and it was just him, and he was like almost talking at the camera, and I'm like. And I don't think that scene ever happens again. Like, I don't remember it happening again. And I'm like, this is a really bizarre shot that they did.
There was a weird cut in this movie, too, that I remember. Like, somebody was talking, and then it cuts to a different scene where it was Mr. Warm. Like, Mr. Warm was talking to Morris, and it cuts to a different scene, and it's a sound bridge. But it's a really awkward sound bridge. It took me out of the movie a bit.
Well, this is an indie film.
Yeah.
Daniel-san. I would like to mention, too, sadly, that... So this movie was made for, like, 30-plus million, and it only made 11 million in the box office. And I never saw any advertising for this movie. I think I heard about it, like, as it was coming out. I forget how. It was, like, just, like, researching Westerns. Like, oh, this movie looks good. And then I remember at the time I didn't want to pay like $5 to rent it. And then now it's finally on Hulu. Mm-hmm. But I kind of feel bad because like this isn't a terrible film. I liked it. It makes me sad because there's so many like good actors in this too. And the only reason I wanted to see it is like, oh, John C. Reilly. And then I realized Joaquin Phoenix, Jake Gyllenhaal. Holy shit.
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal surprised me. Like I'm like, oh, he's
in this movie. And Riz Ahmed, too, is a guy I need to, like, be looking out for because he was freaking great in this movie. And, yeah, I also remember him now from Nocturnal or whatever the heck that other movie was called. Nightcrawler. That movie was super good, too. Okay, well, I don't know if I answered the question. The camera shots, were a little confounding, but also welcoming, because then the film would have been a little more boring if they didn't do some interesting shots.
Right, I mean, like, I always look for interesting shots, and this film really, really stepped up to the plate with that. Like I said, the very first part of this film is a gunshot at, or gunfight at night, and like all you see are just flashes in the darkness, and you just hear the gunfire. And that is, like I said, it's very risky to do that because you can't see any of the action, but it looked awesome if you really start to think about it. The scene where you get the title card and it's just them walking with the burning barn in the background. Oh my god, man, it was so good.
That was cool. There were a few interesting things in this movie that I hadn't seen in other Westerns, but there were just like weird little things. So apparently this movie was based off a book titled of the same name. And I'm wondering if these shots were like directly from the book. Like there's a scene where a guy throws a hat on a chicken, which I kind of liked, you know, or the whole weird like toothbrushing thing where the like, you know, one of the like John C. Reilly's introduced to like brushing his teeth. And later on, it actually comes into play into the film. So there's a lot of little character moments that I liked a lot in this movie. I also thought the writing was really solid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I liked a lot of Jake Gyllenhaal's lines and everything. And some of the philosophy that they were throwing down, baby girl.
Yeah.
But, Dan, it seemed like you didn't like this movie as much as I did. So I'd like to know, what was the stuff that you didn't like?
It's not that I had, in particular, things that I didn't like. There was a lot that I liked about this movie. Like, how you brought up before, the violence was, it was there, but it was kind of low-key. Like, it was not the important part. So, it was weird because the violence was kind of gratuitous. Like, there was a lot of gore in this movie, but the direction of each scene diverts your attention away from it. Like, it's there to look at, but that's not what you're supposed to be looking at. It's really interesting.
It's like just the reality of their lives and what they have to live with.
Yeah, exactly. So, I can't say that I didn't like this film, but I have this really bad habit. I don't know why I do this, and it's always with a Western, and it's like a new Western or something like that I haven't seen. I'm always like, I hope this is the best Western I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I say that out loud, and then that like just kind of ruins the movie for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, the issue is this is such a low-key Western, and again, they do not play up the drama and the romance of a Western. It's not like a fantasy.
Yeah.
You know, like in Romance of the Three Kingdoms, it's literally called Romance of the Three Kingdoms, where like Lu Bu, you know, can just like murder 1,000 people, and it's like this crazy epic.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what we do with Westerns over here. In these spaghetti westerns and stuff, and Italian directors will do this, where they romanticize how good all these gunslingers are, and it's a fun, cool thing. I love stuff like that. It basically makes an anime, which I like. This movie is not, it's not that at all.
Well, there's so many westerns that, what was the other western that we watched that was,
Slow West.
We watched Slow West. We watched that other acid trip western.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like we constantly watch like all these indie westerns try to subvert this romanticism that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I wonder like how much is too much. Like I almost want to see a indie film that balances that romance with the philosophy. You know what I mean? I feel like there's a market for that because westerns are well, I mean, they're not as popular as they used to be, but they're obviously still popular because people are watching them.
Yeah. Okay, I have a question for you, Dan. Do you think this movie worked as a drama or as a comedy? Or both or neither?
More so drama. There were some funny parts, but they weren't like... This film is definitely a drama. Like it's a slow burn kind of movie, but there's still it doesn't burn you so. Maybe it's not a slow burn. Because there's things that happen. They keep you engaged and you're interested in learning about these characters, these sisters, brothers. But overall, I want to say that the film it did lull in some areas.
Mm. It's more about the characters than it is about the plot of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, you have these two guys who are going to take a prisoner from the marshal, or the detective guy who's holding this guy, hostage, and they're going to go and torture him for a formula or whatever. And it's like, that's not really the plot. It's not really about that. It's about so much more than that. And the film is almost not even interested in the plot that it is set up.
If you like look at it from the concept that this is a Western, so it takes place in like the 1800s, something like that. The plot is convoluted. Like, the formula that he is talking about is science fiction. Because apparently, like, you put it in water and it makes the gold shine at you.
Well, yeah, none of this is based in reality. I even looked it up and I was like, was this like a based on something? Because if this was real, then, you know, history would have changed dramatically.
Yeah.
But I'm fine with things, you know, a little fiction in there. That's fine. I mean, I thought it was cool. Dan, I want to play a fun little game with you now.
All right.
Before we get into spoilers, because I found this right before recording. So there are French posters for this movie.
Okay.
And there are some that have just individual characters, and then it'll say like their real name, and then it'll be like is the, and then it'll have like their cool Western name for the movie.
Okay.
And they do it like it's some kind of like Ocean's 11, like he is the ninja and this guy's the fighter or whatever. So I want you to guess who is who or whatever.
That sounds fun.
All right, so who would be the well, this is an easy one. Who would be the chemist?
Chemist is the Warm, Mr. Warm.
Yeah, Mr. Warm, Riz Ahmed.
Yeah.
And then who do you think Jake Gyllenhaal would be? Like, what do you think his weird, cool character title would be?
The Journalist?
Right? You think something like that, but he's the wild card. Like, what?
Well, I guess because he, like, leads them astray.
Yeah, he flips around. You don't know what he's going to do. What do you think Joaquin Phoenix and John C. Reilly are labeled as? It's something sister.
Brother's sister?
No. It's little sister and big sister.
What the fuck? Wait, is Joaquin little sister?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, good.
That's actually pretty fun.
Because, like, John C. Reilly looks so much older than Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And they also don't look like brothers at all.
Yeah,
Any of that kind of bother you?
Well, and then, like, at the very end... No, we can't say that yet.
Uh-oh. Well, hey, we're going to get into spoilers right now, guys. If you want to watch this film, I'm pretty sure I watched it on Hulu. I always forget where I watch these movies from. I think it's worth watching if you like Westerns.
All right, you're going to have to help me out with the end here. So I know that, you know, we get to know the brothers throughout their adventures, and we aren't really concerned with the plot. But why do we end up at their mom's house?
Okay, so the whole thing with their mom, they really are kind of building it up. So they really focus on their dad and their trauma with their parents and what happened with them. So basically, the sister's brothers, when they were young, their dad was an alcoholic who would beat them. And there was a point where their dad was going to do something really, really bad. Maybe kill someone, maybe really hurt someone. And Charlie, played by Joaquin Phoenix, kills his own dad to save them. To save his mom and to save them. And John C. Reilly feels... like, he should have done it because he was the older brother. And he feels almost like he failed to protect his little brother.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since that happened, Charlie's been he's been transformed. Almost like he's turning into his dad.
Mm-hmm.
To where he's drinking a lot like his dad. And he's doing really terrible things while he's drunk. And he just starts to kill people indiscriminately. And there's a line where John C. Reilly is saying, like, I felt like I had to join him as a bounty hunter because he would just go around killing people randomly.
Mm-hmm.
That I wanted to protect him because I failed to do so when I was a kid. So he's not even into like the bounty hunter life. He just wants to make sure his brother is safe. So a lot of this is really about Charlie coming to terms with what happened when he was young.
Right.
And getting rid of his greed and all of the, like him wanting to be basically a bad guy. And that kind of stuff gets literally washed out of him as the movie goes on. So like their character arc is, this movie is a lot about greed. I feel like the entire film was about greed because they're panning for gold. The way they do it is they pour a chemical into the water that if you touch the chemical, it burns you. So they're literally burning themselves to get the gold. So they're getting punished. So the longer they're trying to get gold, the more it's hurting them. And the gold ends up killing half the party. In the process, in like ruining his arm, he loses his gunslinging arm. So his greed literally costs him his best skill, the thing that pays the bills. So they have nothing. And then he starts to realize, okay, maybe money isn't everything. And, you know, maybe my brother really does love me because he's been taking care of me and all this other stuff and protecting me. And I have to figure out a whole new way of living. So his philosophy on life changes dramatically. And then, so they're like, okay, we're going to go home and like go see our mom because we haven't seen her since they both kind of ran away. So it's like his come to Jesus moment. And John C. Reilly already didn't want to be in that life to begin with. It was almost
right. And like he brings up the fact that he wanted to start a family.
Yeah.
But what the other thing that I didn't get was if John C. Reilly was not part of that life or didn't want to be in that life, you know, at the beginning how Charlie is talking to the guy who's giving them the assignment and John C. Reilly has to wait outside.
Yeah.
Why? Because like he mentioned, John C. Reilly mentioned, oh, that guy doesn't like me.
I honestly think it's just he wasn't trusted. The colonel didn't trust him. Oh, dude, we didn't mention who the colonel is.
Oh.
Who has zero lines of dialogue. Hold on. Rutger Hauer is the Commodore.
Yeah.
He has no dialogue. Apparently, this is the last film he did before he passed away.
Really?
Yeah. I think he filmed some other stuff, but this was one of the last films that he did before he passed away. Not a single line of dialogue in this. One of these subversions that this... that the movie does is after a while the sisters brothers are like, okay, the Commodore keeps sending bad guys to go and hunt us down because we didn't do the job we were supposed to do. So they say like, oh, we're going to go and kill the Commodore because it's the only way to stop him from sending men to kill us.
Yeah.
And then after a while, they don't get attacked by anybody. They're like, what's going on? We haven't been like attacked in a few days. And they get to the Commodore and they're having a wake ceremony for him. No one showed up except for the sisters brothers. And he died of natural causes. And they're like, what the hell? They were actually upset that they didn't get to kill him. And I thought like, it's just another way of the movie wanting to trick you into right. thinking, oh, this is a normal Western, and it's not.
And like, I'm a little mad at moments like that in films. Like,
that's this whole movie is you. There's like a build up, and then it's just like, nope.
But then, like, why constantly tease us? What is the point of subversion every single time?
I think it's to try to put into perspective what the film wants you to think is important. It's not about the money. Or the greed or getting revenge or all that stuff, the stuff that just leads to them not living a long life. It's about starting a family and doing what you love and being around the people that you care about the most. I think that's kind of what's going on. I mean, this is me projecting onto the film. Did you feel like you got anything from the film, Dan?
This movie, outside of the visual component, wasn't extremely impressive to me. Like, okay. I got the story, and I got how we would need to pay attention to the characters, and it was wonderfully cast. Like, I loved watching and listening to the actors, but, you know, if I wanted to get a more rewarding Joaquin Phoenix movie, I'd go watch her or Joker.
For sure. Now, here's another thing I thought was interesting, because there were a lot of incidental scenes that actually came into play later on that I did not think they would. Like, you have John C. Reilly gets... a spider crawls in his mouth, and he gets bit by the spider. That affects them going on their hunt, you know, for the guy. And then Joaquin Phoenix is like, you've been slowing us down because of the spider thing, and you got sick, blah, blah, blah. And then John C. Reilly starts to berate him for drinking all the time. So it's like, he's telling him, like, you're the one wasting our time, when it's really the other person. It's like a reflection on himself. Same thing with the horse getting hurt by the bear. Like, how at first he says he doesn't like the horse. The horse is mangy. He wants a better horse. The horse gets hurt. And then he starts to really care for the horse. He's like, oh no, I don't want this horse to die. To the point where he is really, really broken up about when the horse finally dies.
Yeah.
And that's him starting to realize, okay, there's things that are more important than like
this greed or whatever. I did appreciate that. I think that was my favorite story arc, was the horse story arc.
Yeah.
In this film.
So it shows about like how much he really does care about animals and other people, and how like that's what he wants his focus to be on, besides like getting this money. And I liked how every character had a justification for trying to get the money. Like Ahmed, Mr. Warm, he wants to start a utopia in Texas, where he's like, it's going to be free of, like, government or whatever, and it's just going to be like a really cool place, blah, blah, blah. It's pie in the sky shit. And the, what's his face? Jake Gyllenhaal gets sucked into it. He gets roped into it. And there's this whole thing of like, is this a scam? Is this real? Mm-hmm. You know, like, is this really going to happen? And even though you think maybe Ahmed's intentions are noble, it's still, he's still kind of being greedy with this money. Absolutely. You know, like, he's like, I need this gold. Because the gold is a stepping stone for something, a higher, better purpose. And how many times have you heard of, like, someone who's like, I want to do really good things, but first I need to do really something,
yeah,
questionable. You know, I need to, like, step on a few, I need to crack a few heads before I can make my perfect society. And did you get, like, sexy vibes between Ahmed and Gyllenhaal? They were really, like, giving each other the eye.
Like,
you know?
From the very beginning, like, there was definitely this strange homoerotic tinge to their relationship.
I liked it. I liked it. I was like, ooh, what's gonna happen?
Well, I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal was in Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, he was. Jake Gyllenhaal in this, when he finally dies, because there's a scene where Charlie wants to pour more of the liquid into the river.
Mm-hmm.
And he trips, and it spills on his hand, and that's how he burns his hand. The rest of it goes into the water, and then Jake Gyllenhaal slips, and he falls into the water, and he's completely covered in the chemical. And then Riz Ahmed jumps in to save him, which is something I've read about with hot springs. Like, hot springs you're not supposed to swim in,
mm-hmm.
where dogs will run and jump in the water. Their owners will jump in after them to save them, and now they have, like, 100% burns on their entire body, and then they die. So it's like that split second decision of like, oh no, I have to save this person. And I thought that friendship was really interesting. But then after they both pass away, they both die because of this. Jake Gyllenhaal dies. John C. Reilly goes to read his journal. And the first thing he reads in the journal is how happy he was just being in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And like living in the wilderness by himself. Yeah. And how at peace and just how wonderful that was. And then, so, like, you don't need money for that. And that's kind of, like, it's strange that he was even going on this journey. I guess he got sucked into Ahmed or whatever.
It's kind of like the whole transcendentalist movement in the United States. Like, you want to exile yourself from the corruption of society. And you want to live a completely egotistical existence. So, I got that out of that scene specifically, where he's reading the journal. But again, even that death subverted expectation with because like you would never see that in a regular Western.
You would think that they would end it in a shootout between the four characters and they all become best friends.
Yeah.
I loved that. I love how they're like, nah, we're all going to be good friends now. I'm like, what? This is crazy. Okay, so we're running a little long. So that is the episode. Dan, do you want to do any recommendations? It doesn't have to be recently. It can be like further back. I'll give you one. I watched a film called The Ice Cream Man.
Oh.
It is a mid-90s horror film. Low budget. Might even be in India, I'm not sure. But it stars Clint Howard as the creepy psychopathic ice cream man that goes around and murders people. He just got out of an insane asylum, and these little kids are trying to solve the mystery of like who is hurting, you know, who is committing the murders. And it's just a dumb, silly, campy horror, and I loved it. It was so much fun. I highly recommend The Ice Cream Man to everyone. I mean, there is a scene where Clint Howard has two severed heads on ice cream scoopers, and he's making them talk. And he's going, where are you going, little kids?
Jesus
like, don't you know the ice cream man is your friend? It's so stupid. And then one other thing, there's a kid in this movie that is supposed to be like the tubby kid that everyone makes fun of. And his name is Tuna in the film. But he's just a skinny, normal kid with pillows stuffed underneath his shirt. So it's just a stupid looking kid with pillows tucked underneath his shirt. And it looks so bad. The effect is terrible because he's got like a skinny neck and skinny arms and his like big belly. He looks like a little alien. All right. Anyways, go ahead, Dan.
I don't have anyone to recommend. I'll have one for next
That's
week.
That's fine. Though. That's fine. Yeah, we don't have to do it all every time. So thank you guys for listening. I really appreciate it. This has been the show.
You can find us on Twitter at Indie Film Pod. You can find us on Instagram at Indie Film Review Pod. You can email us at theindiefilmreview@gmail.com.
Yeah, baby. I mean, necropodicon.com. You hear us talk about it all the time. Go to that website. Click on the link to the Discord. You can come talk to us. There's a lot of other great shows on the necropodicon.com. Thank you again for listening. I appreciate you. Dan, you got the final word.
And once again, a special thank you from our sponsors. That would be Wizards of Wallaby Washing, Red Rider BB Guns, Coopers, Dan Fine Coffee, Powerline, Brand Powerlines, Elmer Fudd's Fudge Nut Cookies, the Podcasters Association of America, Fred's Fancy Fanny Packs, Showercast for Shitty People, Beans, Monumental Magpie Productions, Greg Shaw, blah, 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 blah. Good night.
Found this Theron Black box. I thought you might want to take a look at it.
She hands over a clear rectangle sheet of black glass with smooth edges.
Oh, wow. This is really cool.
Where did you get that? You shouldn't have that.
I found it on a Theron ship that crashed.
Maybe I could take it to a friend?
I would use the word friend lightly.
Misha walks over to a small filing cabinet that's next to his bed, and he takes a key from around his neck. He unlocks the cabinet, and he pulls out two black cases, which are both marked with Theron symbols.
As you place it down, it instantly lights up.
You know what this means, right?
This could be the chance we've been looking for.
That doesn't sound good.
Sons of the Fathers is a sci-fi horror podcast using the 7th edition Call of Cthulhu role-playing system. It is a Necropodicon original. We advise that the show isn't for children, but is great for those who revel in hapless protagonists facing ever-increasing bad odds. Sons of the Fathers. Boundless space. Endless horror.
Necropodicon. Hard to pronounce? Easy to listen.